Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back, fellow optimists. Sophia Tapia here, your host on the Future Positive Podcast, a podcast from XPRIZE that aims to bring you the most future-forward topics from the world's brightest minds. If you're new to the show, in each episode, you'll hear from world leaders, creators, entrepreneurs, innovators, and changemakers who are paving the way for innovation on and off this planet we call home. So settle in, because we're about to take off and dive into another radically optimistic conversation. Iris AI is an AI science assistant able to read and connect scientific knowledge that will grow up to be the world's first AI researcher within a decade. Behind this revolutionary system is Anita Shirobreda. She founded Iris AI in 2015 and has most recently been competing in the IBM Watson AI XPRIZE. Iris AI is her fourth startup, and she was one of Forbes' top 50 women in tech in 2018. For this podcast, XPRIZE's own Nima Datganiku sits down with Anita to ask her all about her experience as a thought leader and as a woman in AI, her tenacity to identify problems, and her incredible ability to solve them. We also learn which women have inspired her along the way. So buckle up, because it's time to take off.
Hi, Anita. Thank you for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me where you're actually zooming in from today?
I am zooming in from a place called Vordingborg, which is a ridiculously small town about an hour south of Copenhagen in Denmark.
How's Denmark doing during these tail end, hopefully, of the pandemic?
I will say, you know, better than many other places, your location included, potentially. The Danish government has been really good with, you know, locking things down, giving people support. Obviously, there's unemployment benefit, and, you know, it's no country, I think, is perfect, but I think Denmark has handled lockdown really well. And there's never fully been like lockdown where you can't go outside. So it's been overcomable.
Absolutely. Excellent. Let's dive right into the questions here. I remember as a kid, I was always obsessed with Legos. That might have been like a signal that I might be interested in technology. I want to know, like, what was your childhood like and what got you interested in technology?
So it's funny. In some ways, I wasn't really into tech as a kid. I mean, I did love Legos too. I will say that. But maybe not with that, you know, that absolute obsession. I loved handicrafts. I loved creating things. I loved beads and all kinds of things like that. Like, creating things has always been part of me. But actually I think it was from like high school when I started chemistry, that's where I really was like, wow, I love this part of the world. And, you know, physics and math to a certain degree as well. So I was never into like software coding, IT kind of tech. Harder sciences was very much part of my young life and early, you know, late teens, early adulthood. I love that.
Who are your inspirations as a younger person?
So I actually had, I think my biggest role model ever and inspirations was my grandmother. There's so many stories of her, but, you know, she traveled the world from the age of 18. She definitely was not going to get married. She was going to be independent. Then finally, eventually, she did end up marrying my granddad and had a few children. But she had children at the age of 32 after having, like, traveled the world, which was really late at that stage, right? Two generations ago. And then when my grandfather died, she took over his business and ran it for 10, 15 years before, you know, retiring, which meant that she went to lead the Red Cross in her region and went to university for the first time at 79. I think that spirit, maybe there's some genetic part of being born like that as well, but like that was for me like the biggest role model. she was my best friend in addition to being my grandmother. So that was, I think she's been like the biggest idol I've ever had.
It's interesting. You sometimes hear that we are like a reflection of our grandparents, not our parents. And I can definitely see that with you as you're describing your grandmother, that I can see that reflection like generationally. So.
Yep.
You know, you talked about chemistry and you talked about science, but you work in AI now. I'm interested when the pivot happened towards artificial intelligence and machine learning.
So the actual shift to machine learning and AI, that happened when I had a problem to solve that required machine learning and AI. It's in some ways that simple. Although if I go back to kind of some previous startups, you know, for a long time, they were very, very mathematical heavy. They were not science heavy, but like there were, you know, complex problems that required a lot of math, and in retrospect could probably have done way better with some machine learning. But this was pre-2014, pre-2013. So it was like nothing was really happening on that front of really kind of applied AI. So there were projects of the same nature, but it wasn't until 2015 and starting Iris AI that, you know, where we realized, okay, well, if we are going to solve this problem, we're going to have to apply some serious AI machine learning. That was the starting point. And then I just had a very, very, very steep learning curve of learning the lingo and the concept and the reality. What is the hype and what is the hope of AI and what is it, what is it not? 2015 and beyond. So it's been a short but steep ride.
Before we talk about Iris, I'd love to know what those startups or the companies that you worked at before you founded Iris AI.
So it's been a good variety. Iris is my fourth own startup, and I've been with a Silicon Valley startup for a couple of years as well. That was not my own, but I was fairly essential. I was the only one left after everyone else had quit or been fired, which was an interesting situation. Anyway, that's a story for another time. But it's ranged from automatic matchmaking between students and internships to get people real life experience in a much easier way than the HR industry is able to handle today. So that was matchmaking, and it was just a, you know, a simple kind of mathematical approach to it, but that could easily have been, you know, machine learning involved there. That was actually a deeply complex mathematical model developed by some researchers for doing energy optimizing of heat exchanger networks in the process industry, so like paper pulp mills and oil refineries. And it was a method for seeing, you know, what if we changed the way we placed our heating elements and cooling towers and heat exchangers to optimize the energy consumption? So a little bit of math and, you know, working with people who are way smarter than me on the technical front. It's been a fun variety of different companies. My very first company was a theater company where we hosted, you know, theater classes and performances and things like that. It's been a good mix of startups.
It's interesting that you have this history of entrepreneurship. Kind of echoes back to that bug you mentioned about creating things and building things. Is that the through line here?
I think so. And like, I mean, remember too that like I don't have a comparison with what it's like to not be in a startup. Like I've never had a real job. I've had a lot of like side gigs, like, you know, I've been a babysitter, a nanny, all kinds of like side jobs, theater teacher, etc. But I've never had like a full-time employment per se. So I don't know how that compares. But yeah, for me, it's definitely that process of like, hey, I have an idea, or I have a problem I want to solve. Or, I mean, with my first company, it was simply like, I'm not going to get jobs in theater. Well, that's going to be a problem. Let's make ourselves a job. And that was the basic problem we solved at that point. So yeah, I love the creative process. For me, that's really what it is about. It's, you know, going from nothing and some kind of vague idea of something I want to achieve and a big dream and a big fluffy vision, and then sinking your teeth into it and just building and having that iterative creative process of like, okay, we're gonna try this, nope, didn't work, okay, we're gonna try this other thing, nope, didn't work, but you're always working towards a big vision. And that's just a creative process, and we're just using different tools than I did back when I was studying theater.
Yeah, very interesting. Turning to Iris AI, so you know, you're an AI XPRIZE team, but there is an XPRIZE connection, or a Pierre Diamandis connection, for this founding story, right?
Yeah, that is true. No, we founded Iris AI, which is also where I heard about XPRIZE the first time, which was at Singularity University. So we spent the summer at this GSP program, 80-something classmates for the full summer, and we formed a little team, Maria and Jacobo and myself, and a couple more people involved as well. We started the company at Singularity, or the project, or the idea. It wasn't even a company, you know, it was just an idea. And we started it at Singularity, where we also heard about XPRIZE. And that's kind of how we came to think that XPRIZE would be a good idea as well, because we knew the ecosystem. It's a lot of the same people. How can you, you know, deploy people and capital to really change the world and make the world a better place, which is such a cliche, but it's so important, right? If you're not changing the world for the better, if you're not aiming at doing that, then what are you using your time on? Like, what are you spending your time? It can be small or it can be big, but like, that's kind of part of being human, isn't it? To try to make this world just a little bit better. And so, yes, Singularity, XPRIZE, all kind of the same thinking and looking at the exponential tech as well, of course, and how you deploy that.
Can you tell me a little bit about IRIS.ai itself and what you guys do in terms of your use of AI for good?
Yeah, so the fundamental building block, if we can call it that, of what we do is a AI, machine learning, NLP. We have a saying in Norwegian, beloved child has many names. But, you know, we've built this core engine for scientific text understanding. So understanding the context and the content of scientific text. And we're using that engine in a variety of different ways. Our first use case was for academics, so researchers in universities and research institutes doing literature reviews, which is an incredibly tedious process. We have an exponentially growing body of knowledge in the shape of research papers and patents, and it grows. I mean, we're talking 6,000 or so new papers published every day, 3,000 in STEM only. And it's just like, it's becoming increasingly impossible. So we have, you know, a suite of tools to do literature reviews for academia. And then we've also expanded that, seeing that literature reviews and handling content like that in industry just requires some separate tools. So right now we're just launching or have recently launched a tool to do data extraction from patents and research papers. So, you know, you might have pharmaceutical clinical trials, like look at COVID and the number of a crazy amount of patents and papers coming out on that, right, in clinical trials. And, you know, how do you get all that data together from all the papers it's published in, the tables and the text, and put that together in one format for your use? And so that data extraction is... It sounds really like not a silly example, but it sounds like a really boring task. But if you look at the tech that is required to understand, not just like, hey, here's a word, but like understand the context of that word and understand the unit and the value and the context it's being applied in and actually connecting all of that together. That's really, really challenging. As far as we can tell, we are the first in the world to achieve this, which is pretty exciting. And that's more of the kind of corporate company offering. But we keep our academic tools as well. They're really important to us because it's the university researchers we I'm not going to say love the most out of fear of insulting anyone, but that's where our heart started lying and still lies.
What I love about IRIS is it's a really good example of AI augmenting human capacity or human ability. Oftentimes when we think about AI, we think about, you know, dystopian, right? You know, robots are coming to take our jobs, but AI can be used in ways where it's like, you know, it's boring or it's difficult or it's pattern recognition over millions of documents. And IRIS is a really great example of that, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I mean, I obviously agree. But no, I think that's where per 2021, I think that's where AI has the biggest impact, right? Because it is those boring, tedious tasks that you really don't want to do as a human, also because it's error prone. And that's where machine learning systems of 2021 shine the best, right? It's not in the complex decision making. We're simply not there yet. Humans are great at that, but it's in the tedious, nitty-gritty data extraction and searching and managing big amounts of data. Like, that's where these systems can really make a difference.
The other thing I really love about IRIS is the way your team works. It's a distributed team, right? They come from all around the world.
Yes. That is true. Well, I mean, we're mainly in a kind of European-ish time zone these days. So we kind of just spend two time zones as opposed to all of them. Now, so we're about 24 people and we live in about 11 different countries, but we represent something like 17 different nationalities because we have some people who kind of have lived and worked and are born in very different places than they live today. So yeah, we're a little everywhere. We've got a couple of hubs where we have, you know, a couple of more people than the average. But really, we will hire the best talent where we find it. And if people want to move, that's okay with us. We have no interest in people's location per se.
Iris is a semi-finalist in the AI X Prize, and it's amazing to think back on this kind of 4 year, or I guess 5 year now, journey of you know, starting at Singularity and making it all the way to the semifinals out of the hundreds of teams that competed from around the world to make the top 10. Looking back on that journey, like, what are the ups and downs? Because it's not a straight line, right?
No. I mean, it's funny because, like, the XPRIZE competition started when the company was just 6, 7, 8 months old or something. I mean, we were at the stage where, like, I think there was like $1,000 fee to join. And we were like, oh my God, that is so much money. A pretty big chunk of our first investor check. And we're like, do we really want to do that? Like, that was the starting point, right? And we did, and I'm glad we did. The competition has kind of followed the company as we've grown all the way through. And, you know, we've definitely had our ups and downs, both with the competition. I mean, there was one of the rounds we didn't make it through. I think it was like the second year. Like, the first year we won like the milestone award. The second year we didn't get through. And we were super sad. And then we got, like, there was one of the companies that I think went bankrupt or something. And we were apparently first on the waiting list. So we got in anyway. And then the following rounds, we made it to the semifinals. So it just goes to show, you know, the process, the ups and downs it is of building a startup and running a project like this. And then on the flip side, the company itself has also gone through this ups and downs. And early 2019, a little too many things went wrong at the same time. You know, we had 16 people in the crew and we had 2 weeks of salary left in the bank. And there would be, you know, a couple of months till we saw more money. And, you know, we've been through those up and downs as well. And those ups and downs is just part of startup life. Some harsher than others. There is no such thing as a smooth startup ride in any way, shape, or form.
Iris is one of, I think, three teams in the top 10 who are female-led. And it is an interesting thing because female-led startups, especially in the AI world, are few and far in between. And it's an interesting problem because I've found more often than not that female engineers and female entrepreneurs are, like, if not equal, oftentimes better, because they have to overcome so much to get to just an even playing field that they kind of, like, they do more with less, essentially, is the way I look at it. Do you agree with that?
If you look at the data, right, female founders are founded less, they get less capital. When they do get capital, it's lower valuations. There's just a lot of really depressing figures and data on that. So you might be right. People have a tendency to say it's a pipeline problem and just not enough women. But, like, it's a systemic issue, right? We just have to start in kindergarten, right? Or in early preschool where, you know, where if girls make a few errors on their math test, they're told, oh, but great, you did so good. And then if a boy did, you know, they're told, come on, you can do a little better, right? And I'm not making that up. That is scientifically proven that that is what teachers do after observations in the classroom. So on a, you know, a general observation. So I think there is a systemic problem where we discourage it, not deliberately most of the time. But I think that's the world we live in. And now I talked myself way out of your question, but that was, that's my reflections on it.
I think the data shows that the female-founded companies perform better, like they have a better ROI on investors than normal, you know, male-led companies. So I think there definitely is something to that kind of the scrappiness that kind of drives that. But I mean, things are changing though. The problem is, like, if you go and pitch in a room of all men, right? There is an inherent bias that exists there, and it's just, you know, it's a human nature. Like, you want to reflect similar things, you know, you want to see. So there is a bit of a sea change I've seen with female-led investors and funds and organizations kind of pushing that. And have you been able to kind of tap into that to kind of amplify your work?
We have some female investors. But yeah, I mean, I think it's right. And it's so hard, right? Because with a couple of honest, you know, exceptions, I've never experienced any deliberate sexism from any investor. Like, all of the investors I meet, almost all the investors I meet are great, amazing people, right? That will have meetings with me and discuss things. The thing that I've just, you know, have experienced several times, and I think a little too many times for it to be a coincidence, is that, like, we make it through the first meeting, the second meeting, they're starting to prepare their internal investment memos, and, like, it's starting to smell like a term sheet. And then, you know, we have this meeting and the guy in front of me is like, you know what, I just, it's interesting what you do. Like, I can't, like, there's something with a gut feeling. Like, I just think the valuation is a little high, you know, I can't put my finger on it. But as an investor, you have to go with your gut feeling. And I'm like, great. Yeah, I get it. And like, But it's not, like, the thing is, and it's so important that this is not deliberate, right? This is not, like, someone sitting there and going, well, she's not, like, it's just, like, it is so ingrained in how we work. And we have a lot of male investors, too, that you know, has managed to make it past that and have a good gut feeling and trust us, which is, so it's absolutely doable. It is very much a thing, but it's also really hard, right? Because if I ask, you know, any of those investors who went through that process with me and with us, you know, he would say, oh no, it was the business model, or like, I couldn't get myself to believe you would make money, or like, there was, you know, there was something else. You can always find those reasons, and I think you can genuinely believe those reasons. And at the end of the day, come on, like, we're an impact startup. We build products for academics. We solve some really complex problems that also investors have told us we are batshit crazy to even, sorry for swearing, you know, that we are absolutely crazy for even attempting to fix, right, from a technical perspective. You know, so there's that too. So it's not an easy startup to raise funding for anyway, but I don't know on the funding side it has helped me to be female, rather the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea of representation kind of speaks to me where, you know, when we're growing up, even as kids, male or female, or, you know, white or Middle Eastern or, you know, African American, oftentimes the reflection you see in what, you know, people who look like you do or achieve, either in movies or actually in the real world, can oftentimes inspire you or not inspire you to kind of reach for the stars or reach for, you know, become an engineer or a doctor or, you know, do something else. Do you participate in that kind of, like, you know, mentorship or giving back or, you know, speaking and being a public figure to inspire others and the next generation to kind of, you know, follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, so I try. I have a principle that if asked, and it's something to do with girls joining, you know, tech educations or, you know, female founders, startups, you know, all of those things. I have a principle of saying yes and saying yes unpaid, even though I'm usually very sparse with my time for things that take away from my risk that I don't get paid for. But I do that, and I think it's important, right, that we see ourselves. And I think for me, showing up there, it's a gender thing, sure, but it's more than that. So if I look at, like, the average female person, like, I'm not it, right? Like, I'm weird. And so, you know, for me, it's also about seeing not there's like, ooh, that is a female founder or a female investor or a female speaker. But it's also about seeing someone who's like you, right? And I will be like some people. And there's definitely going to be a lot of people who don't recognize themselves in me. And that's also good. So for me, role model isn't just like, hey, I'm female and I'm running a company. But it's like, all of these other things as well, right? And just being yourself. There's the queerness element. There is the tattoo element, which is a self-expression thing, right? And there's all these other things about me that's like maybe a step aside from the norm. But I think everyone has that. And like just showcasing the breadth of human beings, you know, people with different abilities, you know, who are just differently able, and you know, it's just like so many different things that we need to look for diversity in.
Yeah, I love this idea of strength in diversity, right? A lot of times you're like, oh, I have to fit in, right? I have to fit in to enable to succeed. But more often than not, the, you know, the crazies or the cools or the difference or the, oh wow, like that kind of inspiration brings with it innovation. And I think it also, going back to, you know, our concept of, you know, AI itself, I think that's very important as well. Just representation in data sets, and when you're dealing with data, if the data is all the same, then you're not going to get, you know, robust results, right?
Absolutely. And if you don't have people with different lived experiences in the room, you're not going to have anyone questioning your data. That's just a fact, right? It's not going to be good discussions. I think it was Patton who said, if everyone is thinking alike, then no one's really thinking. And I think that's the thing, right? I mean, diversity isn't like, oh, let's be nice to people of color, people, you know, females, or, you know, that's not what it's about, right? It's about, it's seriously good business, because otherwise it will backfire on you. Like, that's why you want to bring diversity in, right? It has nothing to do with being nice. I mean, it is also nice, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's this whole area of responsible AI and ethical AI is, like, I think now is more of a lip service, but I think over the next 10 or 20 years, it's going to be like dollars and cents, right? Like, it's going to be performance, it's going to be liability, it's going to be legal. These are things I think that are going to just continue to accelerate as we as AI is just adopted further on as we move forward.
Absolutely. And we will see. I mean, there'll be lawsuits against discrimination from an AI. I'm sure there must have been a few already, but you just need to be responsible with it, you know, with what you implement, because it will backfire from a PR angle, from a legal angle, whatever it is.
Looking to the future, I wonder what excites you, or what applications of AI or maybe other future technologies that excite you looking to the, you know, looking forward.
There is so much. I mean, I'm personally like super excited about like the future of food as well. Like, I think that is such an amazing, like, I'm growing my own, like the pandemic has allowed me to like start my own hydroponic little vegetable farm in my living room, which is cool. I love that. And I personally, I'm really excited about like the ability to do things more at home, to kind of have technology, you know, really, really powerful technology come into everyone's hands. And we've seen that like with the cell phone or with the, you know, smartphones. And we can see that on all different areas, right? So more powerful systems and both hardware and software. So that's that. And then I also think there's a lot of services that, when automated, can be available to a lot more people. So like, you know, I was giving a talk to a bank, and we were talking about applications of AI in banking. And I think if you go back 10, 15, 20 years to banking, it was like personal advice, right? You had your bank guy or gal that you would go down to and talk about your personal economy or personal finances. And that doesn't, it might happen with some local banks, but for most people, that doesn't happen anymore. But if you automate parts of that, if the chat bot that your bank has developed isn't the terrible chat bot that exists today, but actually a smart, consolidated advice giving that knows that you, you know, should fix the suspension of your car within a year because you've had the car for however long you need to have a car for before you need to fix the suspension. But that kind of things. And then fundamentally, though, I kind of want to dismantle capitalism too. So maybe banking was a terrible example. But I think like bringing services out to more people because you can do it at scale, I think that is really, really powerful. And that's kind of what in some way what we want to do with Iris as well. We want to take all of that, you know, amazing scientific knowledge that exists in the world and actually like make sure that anyone with a big problem to solve has that information at their fingertips. That's the fundamental premise for what we're doing. And obviously we have to go via the academics and the corporate R&D departments, but ultimately that's where we, where, you know, what we're striving for.
Do you have any advice for any young women who want to actually get involved in STEM? You know, what are some, like, what's the best way for them to jump into this field?
Just kind of do it. it's one of those things, right? I think for me, like, I was going to study medicine, right? There was this path that I saw that was like driven by like part ambition, part fear of the unknown, part like what will people think? And then I ended up in theater instead. And so like, whatever it is that you want to do that drives you, that, you know, for the US listeners, don't put you in a massive amount of student debt in a terrifying economy. I will add that disclaimer. But, you know, whatever it is that drives you, you're going to be learning and relearning about the thing you start with, but then about everything else too over the next, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of a career. So, you know, make sure you pick something interesting that you can keep diving into. The best career advice I ever got, I was freaking out because I was doing my master's in entrepreneurship and I'd done all these silly, crazy things already. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, everyone else is applying for management trainee programs in like fancy companies. And I'm just like, not interested. What, am I doing something wrong? And this career coach at my school, she said, look, your career is not some ladder that you're climbing. Your career is simply a collection of everything you have done up until this point. So I think that would be my recommendation if you're going into kind of some STEM, you know, tech career and you're curious about that, just jump in, right? Just do the thing that gets you up in the morning, that makes you go, okay, I'm going to spend an extra hour this afternoon, or like, I'm going to work some extra hours over the weekend, and then go take time off and make sure you get work-life balance. But that thing that gets you up and gets you going, even when you really don't want to do it and you really just want to go cuddle up in bed and not do it anymore, but you still keep doing it, right? focus on those things and don't care what other people tell you.
Yeah, this idea of career pivots, I think, is really important, because I think we were told back in the day that, you know, you have to pick one job and stick with it. But the reality of the situation is, like, you know, if you're in your 20s or your 30s and or even older, of course, and you're like, you know what, I want to get into tech, right? You can take a coding camp or like a product development class or things like this, and you can jump into that, and you don't have to be, you know, a computer science undergrad, right? You can, as you said, like, you are a CEO of a major, you know, tech startup, and, you know, your background was in theater for a while. So, like, that's like, that to me, like, is the key here, that I think people just they don't give themselves the chance to kind of think in that way.
Exactly. And I think there is something to, like, getting an engineering degree or like that technical degree. Like, my sister is a marine engineer, right? And it is obvious that she has some, like, seriously hard skills in the area of engineering that I am not even remotely qualified to think about. So there is something to getting some really kick-ass skills in the, you know, as the basis. My kick-ass skills are in communication, right? That's what I, you know, honed in on and got to practice through theater school. And that's what I'm good at, right? And now I get to combine that with, like, an amazing amount of science and work with these crazy good scientists every day. And so, you know, pick what you're good at, what you like, what you enjoy. And getting good at something isn't, like, an innate ability, right? It comes with practice. It comes with doing. So good at is a silly term as well. But yeah, that would be my advice overall.
We talked earlier about mentors, and you mentioned your grandmother as one. Do you have any inspirations currently in terms of people, either in technology or otherwise, that inspire you today?
So I've never been, besides my grandmother, I've never been much for idolizing. But a few years ago, I realized I needed some more female role models to kind of pick instead of talking about, like, Steve Jobs. For me, one of the people I found that I'll mention as an example is Amanda Palmer. She's an artist. She is a musician. She is one of the first musicians ever to start an email list in, like, 95. And she has since used technology to build a very, very dedicated following. You know, she has a Patreon account where I think she's, like, she has followers for, like, $15,000 a month. So she gets to produce anything she wants. She gets to, like, make art, removing the desire, the need to make something that will sell, because people are paying her to make it, not by buying it from her, in a sense. And so she's flipped that whole model on the side. She has an amazing TED talk called The Art of Asking. And I just love her whole, like, mixture of art and technology and being, like, vulnerable and fearless. She's one of the people that I would come closest to being an idol and inspire me.
If there are any listeners who are interested in learning more about IRIS, or you know, academics who actually want to use your service, where can they find out more?
So our website is www.iris.ai. We have a tool for academics that they can sign up for to do literature reviews that is connected to, you know, 200 million open access articles and a bunch of patents and European funding opportunities and a number of different things like that. And then yeah, on the corporate side, there's also more information on the website about our data extraction and all kinds of geeky fun stuff.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us today. These are the final days of the pandemic. So soon we will be able to see one another again in person, as we have in the past as well. And thank you so much for joining us.
That was XPRIZE's own Nima Dutkaniku in conversation with founder and CEO of Iris AI, Anita Sherrill Bretta.
Thanks for listening to the Future Positive Podcast. If you'd like to support our show, share this episode with fellow futurist friends, and remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Apple or wherever you get your pods. Your feedback really does help.
This podcast comes from XPRIZE, a global future positive movement of over 1 million people and rising, delivering radical breakthroughs for the benefit of humanity. Sign up to join us and support the movement that is making a change in the world 10 times faster. Whether it's lending a hand, a dollar, or an idea, we all have a role to play in making the future a better place. The only way to get the future we want is to create it ourselves. Learn more at xprize.org. See you next week.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.